there. Welcome to Mental Illness Life. I am Brooke. And as you can see on the video, on the YouTube, that I am recording these as well. And you can also see that I'm not in my closet podcast studio. I am here in my living room. And so I think there's a couple of things back there that are in the way. And you're probably going to see and hear my dog, Coconut, behind me. Usually I can lock her out, but just makes it all that more real, right? So I haven't seen you or talked to you guys in a little while. There's been quite a bit going on. I've been asked to do some speaking engagements. I've been talking with a lot of different sponsors. She's drinking her water. And getting a lot of feedback. I've been doing a lot of research. I've been finishing up my TMS. So I kind of wanted to like wait till that was finished. I did 36 sessions of transcranial magnetic stimulation. And I'm telling you guys, it's legit. And here in Boise, the location is called NUMI TMS with Dr. Kent. And he and that group is incredible. And I know they have the Brainsway machines that are just on the cutting edge. And if you suffer from chronic depression, medication-resistant depression, you got to check that out. And I don't know where you are in the world right now, but you've got to look into it. Transcranial magnetic stimulation with the Brainsway machines. But here in Boise, Idaho, you got to talk to Dr. Kent at NUMI. So again, to recap for those of you who are watching the latest one and backwards, my name is Brooke Lacey, and I live successfully with mental illness, and I have for my entire adult life. I was diagnosed many, many years ago with post-traumatic stress disorder, bipolar 1, anxiety disorder, and adjustment disorder. So all the disorders. And, you know, before, you know, my early 20s and late teenage years, I was misdiagnosed, and then I was over-medicated and under-medicated. And, you know, we just have to figure out what works. There's Coconut in the background with her sticks. Okay, my house is really not that dirty, but she likes to bring in sticks all the time. Oh, and here she is with her other toy. This is going to be a problem, but I don't know how many of you have puppies at home, but you can relate. So the podcast has gotten quite a bit of attention. And I think because of my raw approach and my sort of no-nonsense, no-bullshit way of looking at things, and I appreciate the encouragement from so many people. I'm telling you that what this all means is storytelling. Okay. The storytelling is what's going to save lives. And for those of you who are, you know, nervous about it, especially you men, if you're nervous about it and you think, you know, by saying your story, just saying your shit, that there's going to be backlash, you know, there might just be, but I'll tell you something, it gets easier. It gets easier and easier as you do it. I want to get started. I'm going to sort of follow along with my notes over here on my computer. So I'm not necessarily going to look at the camera. I'm going to see how that works because I don't want to get really distracted by what's happening, like the dog. And I want to, this one's kind of like, it's a little bit, I don't know. There's a lot to it. And I've been working on this one a while. Some things have come up in the last little while that has made me want to research this and talk about it, and it is insecurity. More specifically, intense paranoid insecurity, which is what I feel like is happening with me. And for those of you who know me, And maybe have seen like videos that I've done, and even this, right? It seems like I'm so confident, and I am. I don't have body image issues, and I'm certainly, you know, don't look like a model, but so that's, you know, not what I consider insecurity. For me, insecurity is the constant fear of abandonment, constant fear of I've done something wrong. And it goes along with anxiety disorder, but this is sort of the garbage out of having anxiety disorder, is the intense paranoid insecurity. And I feel that, like, after the TMS, I am dealing with things a little bit better. So, the other thing I was going to tell you, that, like, the last one, the mania manifested, I felt like going into it, it was all dark and, you know, like, super stressful for me. And I was, like, you know, pausing before each time I said what was happening with me. Like, my, if you didn't listen to that one, okay, I will recap. My mania, I have bipolar one, and I have manic episodes, and they are controlled by lithium. I take lithium. Yes, it's what's in batteries. And I talk a little bit more about that on that episode, but the dog is scratching the chair now. So my bipolar manic episodes manifest in anger and rage and things that are not very pretty. And a lot of you responded with pretty much, yep, that's me too. Like, I got you, girl. So it wasn't as vulnerable as I thought it was going to be. And I mean, that's the whole point to this, is like, nobody's talking about it. So if I'm going to talk about it, there's no precedence for it. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. So when I, you know, had those long dramatic pauses, it was kind of like, what's the point of this, really? Like, I'm just saying my shit, because that's what this is all about, right? So let's get started with this idea of living with intense paranoid insecurity. I have recurring nightmares. I have forever. And it hasn't been specific relationships, but it has been just forever. Even when I wasn't in a relationship and single, that my nightmares are being cheated on. And specifically, like, having the girl show up at a house or wherever I am with the boyfriend or my ex-husband, and being like, you're not good enough for him, and, you know, he's mine now. And then that person saying to me, yeah, like, you're out, she's in. And it's the kind of thing that just sticks with me, like, long after I wake up. And I know it's because of my intense fear of rejection. It stems from being told, nobody likes you, Brooke, by the girls in the junior high locker room. I know a lot of you will understand that. It's because I was marched into a class in junior high earlier that week to stand in front of the room and tell everyone I was a liar. My mother actually did that, and was mortifying. And so after that, I was laughingstock of the junior high. And it's also because of my mom cut off all my hair because I was too pretty in her eyes. I'm going to show a picture of that when I edit this video. And I don't know, just kind of add some background. I went through a bunch of pictures earlier, and like this one, look how cute this is. I don't know if I should be doing this or scanning it in, but look at how cute she is with her little butterfly. That's young Brooke. Podcast listeners, you'll have to just watch the video to get that. So we're called a narcissistic generation. We're told that, like, technology and social media are giving us an inflated sense of self, like, we're just full of ourself. But, like, most of us don't, like, walk around feeling like we're all that great. In fact, there's one underlying emotion that overwhelmingly shapes our self-image and influences our behavior, and its insecurity. And for me, it's intense paranoid insecurity. And I say paranoid because it's irrational, okay? It's irrational. There's no reason why. I've never been cheated on. Like, I've never had that situation. Well, just the situation that I dream about, that I have these nightmares about, has never really happened. It's just this thing that I'm so afraid of. Here's a point that I found in Psychology Today. If you could enter the minds of people around you, even the narcissistic ones, you're likely to encounter ceaseless waves of insecurity. A recent survey found that 60% of women experience hurtful, self-critical thoughts on a weekly basis. So regardless of mental illness, I feel like it just exacerbates, because if you, you know, if you are living with, you know, past trauma and, you know, bipolar or depression or anxiety, it's going to exacerbate the insecurity like tenfold. So, but the fact is, this kind of thing, this discussion, this story I'm telling right now is for all of you, regardless of whether you've been diagnosed with mental illness. So hopefully this gets to more people that way. Here's some more research. Father and daughter psychologist Dr. Robert and Lisa Firestone used an assessment tool known as the Firestone Assessment for Self-Destructive Thoughts to evaluate people's self-attacks or critical inner voices along a continuum. What they found is that with most common self-critical thought people have toward themselves is that they are different, not in a positive sense, but in some negative, alienating way. Whether our self-esteem is high or low, one thing is clear: we are a generation that compares, evaluates, and judges ourselves with great scrutiny. By understanding where this insecurity comes from, why are we driven to put ourselves down, and how this viewpoint affects us, we can start to challenge and overcome the destructive inner critic that limits our lives. So I feel like there's this like internal dialogue that accompanies our feelings of insecurity. It's called, like, it's been called the critical inner voice. It's formed like out of painful early life experiences that like we witnessed, or having, you know, hurtful attitudes toward us, or like people close to us seeing them hurt. And then as we grow up, we unconsciously adopt and integrate this pattern of destructive thought, like toward ourselves and to others. Because a lot of times this is projected to others, right? Not just to ourselves. And that can be so destructive. So what events or like attitudes shape the inner critic? Here's some notes I took. The experiences we have with our influential early caretakers can be at the root of our insecurity as adults. Okay, we've talked about this a lot, right? Imagine a child being yelled at by a parent. And I'm using this as an example, but of course, like, I'm talking about my own story. You know, if they yell something like, "You're so spaced out, can't you figure anything out on your own?" And then imagine like negative comments and attitudes parents express toward themselves. Like, I used to do I'm in tech, I'm a web developer by trade, and I've been in the technology field for a long time. So I would do these like workshops for girls to get them into technology and kind of just teach them about computers. And their parents would drop them off. And even sometimes the dads would be like, "Oh, I'm so glad you're doing this. You know, I am so bad at computers. And I, you know, I'm so dumb." And I'd be like, "You know, they can hear you, right? Like, you've got to be nice to yourself. Like, come on." Because they hear, and like this example, saying like, "Oh, I look so terrible," or "I'm so fat." These attitudes don't even have to be verbalized to influence the child, right? Like if a parent's gone, like the absence of, you know, a dad is usually what it is, leaves children feeling insecure and believing there's something fundamentally wrong with them. An intrusive parent can cause children to become introverted or like self-reliant in ways that make them feel insecure or, of course, untrusting of other people. There's studies that have been shown that exaggerated praise can be damaging to a child's self-esteem. So it's sort of like, where is the fucking balance, right? Like, where, how do we get to that balance? Because it can be too much praise, it can be not enough, it can be complete absence of, you know, attention. All of it is destructive to self-esteem and can cause like really debilitating insecurity. So as a child, I needed to be seen, and I wasn't seen for who I was. And I didn't feel secure at all. And when I went into this on a different episode, about the EMDR, the trauma therapy that I went through, and it stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And you go back to your child self and you nurture that child, and it was extremely potent and intense. And, you know, I saw my child self for who she is or was. You know, we don't want to get to quantum physics in the whole thing, but it's like, isn't it all just happening at the same time, right? So that's really powerful when you can take it upon yourself to go back and see that child self for who he or she is, and then take that forward with you into the future. And there's like the key to, okay, here's some research I did. And this is by Dr. Daniel Siegel. He authored Parenting from the Inside Out. He says the key to healthy attachment is in the four S's: feeling safe, seen, soothed, and secure. And I know that those of you who are parents, me also, like I'm vigilant about that because of what I went through. So he says, whether children are being shamed or praised, they are most likely not feeling seen by the parent for who they really are. They may start to feel insecurity and lose a sense of their actual abilities. So he goes on to say, a healthy attitude for parents to maintain is to see themselves and their children realistically and to treat them with acceptance and compassion. The best way a parent can support their children is to allow them to find something that's unique to them, something that lights them up and that they will work to achieve. He also quotes this author and civil rights leader, Howard Thurman, who famously said, "Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive." And there's also, I don't know if I said this in a previous podcast, but Winston Churchill said, don't ever give up on something that you can't go a day without thinking about. And that's definitely me right now with this project. I spend a lot of time, a lot of extra time on this that probably should be spending working, but I feel it's important and I'm going to keep doing it as long as people are listening. And it's giving me purpose. It's giving me life, right? As the kids say. So it's like whenever we pursue something as a kid that like interests us, don't you remember that? Like you would just come alive. I know for my son, he is super interested in video games and like even the, you know, modding them and recoding. It just, he comes alive with it. And I know there's a lot of controversy about screen time and that kind of stuff, but, you know, if it makes somebody happy, then they should be doing it. And so, you know, like there's just so many things that shape our critical inner voice, from negative attitudes directed toward us to attitudes like our parents had toward themselves. And then, like, as we get older, we internalize these points of view as our own. We keep these attitudes alive by believing in our insecurities as we go along in life, right? We just keep believing this stuff. You know, I have kind of a toxic situation right now in my life, a toxic relationship, and there's a lot of gaslighting, something that's going to be an entirely separate episode to talk about is, and how that affects us with mental illness. But you start believing it. If they're good enough, which this person is, definitely, you start believing the shit that's told to you. And because of past patterns that make you believe the shitty things that are told to you, and then you start telling yourself this stuff. And it's not easy to stop. I'm going to kind of go through this like list of things that I found, and then I kind of tweaked them, just some things you can do to kind of be conscious of your insecurity and work through things as they come up. Because for me, it's like a fight or flight. I was just having lunch with my friend and talking about how with adjustment disorder, when a whole bunch of things happen in your life, you know, a breakup or, you know, job loss, or, and it all kind of happens at once. When you get stuck there and it's a fight or flight, but you're just stuck. That's what adjustment disorder can make very difficult for you. So I was thinking this as I was kind of writing out my notes, that insecurity is like, it's an inner feeling of being threatened and being inadequate in some way. And we've all felt it one time or another. It's totally normal to have feelings of self-doubt once in a while. It's chronic insecurity can sabotage your success in life, right? I have chronic paranoid insecurity. And again, you may not know that. Insecurity can, like, it robs me of my peace and it prevents me from being able to engage with, like, a romantic partner. This is just from past experience. And, like, being relaxed and authentic, you're sort of fighting with that paranoia and that insecurity way more than you are able to deal with whatever situation comes up with that partner. And that's just, like, how it is for me in life, like, constantly. And the actions that come from insecurity, like, always asking for reassurance, jealousy, accusing, and snooping. I never really was like that, but I felt the pull to be like that, just to be, like, completely untrusting, because I always thought I'm not lovable. And of course they're gonna go do some shit, because there's gotta be something better out there than me. And it's not even, like, that clear of a conversation with yourself. It's truly, like, it's just this, it's just there constantly. This is how you think at all times. It fucking sucks. Being self-aware is, you know, it's difficult to achieve. I think it takes a lot of years of experience and a lot of time, you know, understanding yourself and going through situations where you put yourself into a place where you are inevitably going to be insecure. And then it, you know, becomes this part of life that you recognize when you're insecure and maybe learn from it, hopefully learn from it. Because, like, I find myself feeling just self-doubt all the time, short on confidence. Despite all my accomplishments, I feel like a fraud, like I'm destined to be exposed, you know, of something. I'm obsessed with, like, the story of Elizabeth Holmes, the CEO of Theranos. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just Google it. She defrauded, like, billions and billions of dollars. And then, like, the guy that threw that big party on that island. Now I can't even think of it, but again, Google that too. Both Hulu and Netflix have a like documentary about it. But it's like that fascination with lying and, you know, being found out. And I think it just goes, you know, goes multiple different ways. You can be worried about finding out something of someone you're close to, or them finding something out about you. And, you know, so many times I feel like I don't deserve lasting love in relationships, and that a partner will inevitably leave me. And that makes it very difficult to be in a relationship. Let me just tell you. Thanks, mental illness. A lot of times, you know, up until like a year ago or so, I really just stayed at home a lot. People lately around here are like, how did I not know you, you know, before? And I said, you know, there was a time that I just stayed in my cocoon and didn't do anything. And I kind of had to, you know, get over myself and start doing this to break out of it. And I would stay home. I'd be like afraid to go meet new people, which of course people are going to be so surprised at, because I'm constantly talking to new people and I'm fine with it. So for me, it's not really like outward appearance insecurity. It's definitely like internal, you know, is someone going to find me out for something that's completely irrationally not, you know, true. And I know that most of us feel insecure a lot of times, and but some of us feel it constantly. It's crippling. And it depends on the kind of childhood you had, the, you know, past, any past traumas, especially recent experiences of failure or rejection, loneliness, social anxiety, negative beliefs about yourself, perfectionism, or having a critical parent right here, or a critical partner can all contribute to insecurity. So that's one of the things too, like with adjustment disorder, is this sort of idea that a recent failure or rejection can throw you into a tailspin. And so like recent events in our lives can really affect both our mood and like the way we feel about ourselves, which is exacerbated by having these specific diagnoses. There's research on happiness that suggests up to 40% of our happiness quotient is based on recent life events. So the biggest negative contributor to happiness is the ending of a relationship, followed by the death of a spouse, a job loss, and negative health events. Since unhappiness also influences your self-esteem, failure and rejection can deliver a double whammy to your confidence. Rejection is this external thing that happens to us, right? But it's internalized into insecurity within ourselves. So yes, you may be rejected from a job or from a person or, you know, a relationship, but it's what we do with that rejection that really creates our mood and perspective and outlook and all of the things that go along with our day-to-day experiences. It's what we do with that intake of information, that intake of criticism. Like, for example, you know, losing a job. I've definitely lost jobs before. I've told you this last time that I'm in the corporate world, I'm seen as aggressive, and that does not bode well with managers. Oh, I found this little tidbit online. Yeah, I said tidbit. It might help to understand that failure is a nearly ubiquitous experience. Before becoming president, Abraham Lincoln lost his job, was defeated for nomination to Congress, and failed at least twice in Senate bids. Persevering despite setbacks can lead to eventual successes, which raise your self-esteem. I know you've heard those stories before, like Michael Jordan, you know, didn't make the basketball team. You know, he tried out like 100,000 times. You know, those stories, and I'm not going to repeat them now, but you know, you're going to get rejection. That book called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck talks about finding the problems that you are, you know, that you want to have, that you want to solve. And that is the fastest way to happiness and not feeling insecure. There's some tools that I'm going to give you to like overcome failure or rejection-based insecurity. And of course, these are all easier said than done. You're like, you know, fuck, Brooke, this is, you're telling me what I already know, but let's just let it sink in again. Number one, give yourself time to heal and adapt to the new normal. Number two, get out and engage with life, following your interests and curiosity. I had lunch today with a friend who said by listening to these podcasts, she also lives with mental illness. She also lives with a bipolar diagnosis and borderline personality disorder diagnosis. And she said, by listening to this podcast and getting to know me, it has really, like, she feels the urge to get out and engage with life. And that's what you have to do. You have to keep trying and over and just kind of get with the program. Number three here is reach out to friends and family for distraction and comfort. And that's a big deal. Like, you know, when you have a breakup, your first instinct is to, you know, crawl into bed and like never get out of bed. But you'll find that if you make plans and you do these things with people, it'll create distraction and it'll be comfortable. So, you know, just do your best to reach out and make plans. Number four is get feedback from people you trust. So similar to, you know, creating that distraction is, you know, talk about it with people. You don't have to get completely, you know, into the whole thing, but at least, you know, give the pain points and see what the feedback is. Number five is persevere and keep moving towards your goals. And again, I know it's easier said than done, but if you just keep that sort of mantra in your mind at all times, just persevere, persevere, you will end up doing that. And again, the insecurity is never going to go away. I'm never going to not be paranoid and insecure. Never. It's just, I'm constantly telling you guys that self-awareness is the only way to go. Recognizing your insecurity, recognizing your what holds you back, and doing something about it. Going and see a therapist. Talk to your friend about, you know, what's bothering you. And if needed, see a doctor, because you won't be able to do any of these things unless you have the wherewithal to get there. And that might mean medication or TMS. And then number six, be willing to try a different strategy if necessary. This, I cannot stress enough to you that you have to try different things. If it doesn't work, you try the next thing. If it doesn't work, you have to try the next thing. I was on the radio on Friday promoting this very cool project that I'll be doing in October called This Is My Brave. And that's, I believe it's worldwide. But here in Boise, this is the third year they're doing it. And I will be on stage talking about my story and trying to be funny. But when people ask me about how do I live successfully with mental illness, it's because I'm willing to try different strategies and keep going. And that's how the medical, you know, the mental illness medical mechanism, say that 10 times real fast, works, is they just don't have an exact science, a specific way of doing things. You have to just keep trying different things. So the other thing too is social anxiety. So many of us experience a lack of confidence in social situations like parties, family gatherings, interviews, and dates. The fear of being evaluated by others and found to be lacking. This can all lead to being anxious and self-conscious. And so you probably avoid social situations, experience anxiety when you anticipate in social events. I told you that in the one episode that I have to sit in my car for 10 minutes, you know, doing breathing exercises before I go into a new place. And a lot of times it's because of my big personality that attracts people to me. And that in itself causes insecurity. Coconut agrees. I don't know if you heard her bark, but I had to put her outside with a bone. So again, this like recent past experience can feed your sense of not belonging, not feeling important or interesting, or just not being good enough. Just a couple more things to sort of take with you on this. I know this episode's a little bit longer than normal, so thank you for being patient. But these are going to hopefully help you combat insecurity in social situations. So number one, talk back to your inner critic. Remind yourself of all the reasons that you can be interested, that you can be interesting and fun, or would be a good friend or partner. Number two, prepare in advance. This is very good. Think of some things you can talk about: current events, movies you've seen, hobbies, your job, or your family. Number three, avoiding social situations just makes things worse. I'm telling you, you have to just get out and do it. So go to a party or on a date, even if you're nervous. Your anxiety should decrease once you get engaged with others. If not the first or second time, then once you get used to showing up. And again, it's the same thing with telling your story. It gets easier and easier as you do it. So you just have to keep going. Even if it's just for 10, 15 minutes, you go to a party, just kind of put yourself in that situation, you know, have an exit strategy, of course, know where the exits are, and just, you know, do what you can. Number four is set yourself a limited, realistic goal. It could be anything from talking to two new people or finding out more about one person's work and hobbies. Just ask questions. You know, I'm a born salesperson. I could sell you your own shirt, I've been told. And the whole thing is just asking people questions. It's the easiest way to do you see her sitting right there? She's like, what is happening? Let me in. It's the easiest way to get past your fear is just ask questions like that, you know, awkward silence. Just think of something to ask. What do you like about your job? You know, do you have brothers and sisters? I mean, even if it's super awkward, at least there's no silence. And then the last one is deliberately focus on others to combat intense self-focus. This is exactly what I was just saying. Put on your observer hat and notice what other people seem to be feeling and doing. Do you notice any similarities or skills you can learn from them? So I think that's the last part of this, is that I can't stress enough that, you know, becoming self-aware is the most important thing when you deal with mental illness. And once you feel like you're getting there, that's when everything else will sort of fall into place, and you'll be able to step back for a moment in social situations and, you know, ground yourself and be able to go forward in asking people questions and creating conversation that way, and hopefully combating your social anxiety. So I want to leave you with this. I was looking for a great quote to sort of end this with, and there's a lot of celebrities that deal with mental illness and insecurity. And it's one of those things where we seek attention to fill that need. And there was a lot of good quotes, but the best one, I feel like it's short and to the point, with from Meryl Streep, who says, "I say to myself, I don't know how to act. And why does anybody want to look at me on screen anymore? Lots of actors feel that way. What gives you strength is also your weakness, your raging insecurity." So I guess I just feel like it's never going to go away. Use it to your advantage. And I appreciate you all and your encouragement of me and loving the fact that I'm being vulnerable, but it's really just flowing through me. You can do it too. You can tell your story. Make sure to email me at brooke@mentalillnesslife.com. Tell me what's up. And thank you again. I hope that you take care of yourselves and each other.